Okay. Namatu Ratanatayasa. So welcome everyone. Today we're transmitting live again from Wat Thai of Los Angeles. And today I thought I would continue with the Dhammapada, which is the path of Dhamma, the path of truth. A classic Buddhist text composed of a few hundred verses on the pithy saying of pithy sayings of the Lord Buddha that were delivered on various occasions. So we've gone through two of them already. Now we'll move on to number three and number four. Three, four, and five. And number three, I'll just go through them all actually, and then we'll talk about the background and the meaning of some of them. The first one goes, Akochi mang avadimang ajini mang ahasime ye jatang upanai hanti verang te sang na sammati. Which means, he abused me, he struck me, he defeated me, he robbed me. If any cherish this thought, their hatred never ceases. And the second one is the opposite. Again, this is the book of pairs, the Yamagavaga. So there's going to be always two. It's going to go in pairs. The fourth one is Akochi manga wadi manga jini manga hasime, which is the same as the first one. Akochi means he abused me. Awadhi means he struck me. Ajini means defeated. Ahasi means robbed. But then it changes. Ye jatang nu panaihanti veerang te supasamati. Which means one who doesn't dwell on these thoughts. One who doesn't keep these thoughts in mind. Dwelling over the bad things that other people have done. Vairang te supasamati. Their hatred ceases. Actually, vaira is often not translated as hatred, but rather as vengeance or enmity. This cycle of revenge ceases for them. Enmity, the having of enemies, ceases. So we live in this world trying to live in peace and harmony with each other. In fact, the king of the angels, Sakka, he came down to see the Buddha once and asked this very famous question. People want to live in harmony and peace with each other. Why is it that they can't? Why is it that they cannot live in harmony and peace? And the Buddha said, it's because of their vying for things, their jealousy and their stinginess, their inability to share, inability to distribute wealth and power, our inability to give up, to let go, to help other people, our jealousy and stinginess, our desires, our addiction to happy and unhappy feelings. And so here the Buddha is pointing out this important fact of our existence, that for us to live in this world in harmony and in peace, we have to give up these thoughts that people have hurt us, and that when someone does a bad thing to us, not to hold on to it, not to keep it inside. For someone who can't do that, then they'll always have enmity. And the summary verse is the third verse. It's just summarizing the other two. Why is that? Because nahi vere na vera ni samati dha kudachanang avere na cha samanti esa dhammo sanantano. Which means, let me just get the translation here so that I can get it perfect. For not by hatred are hatreds ever quenched here in this world, meaning never is hatred. Kodachanang means ever, or in any case, For not by hatred are they ever quenched. You could never quench hatred by hatred. By love, rather, are they quenched. Actually, the word is not love, and the word is not hatred. Nahi weirena, not by vengeance, not by enmity is enmity quenched. Ever quenched. By non-enmity, by giving up our enmity, atweirena means not being hateful or spiteful or vengeful. This is an eternal law, esa tammo sanantano. This is not something that just the Buddha taught. This is a part of nature. So first, the stories behind these two verses. The first story is a story of a monk who ordained when he was old. And so he looked like he was an elder monk. And I've experienced this before in Thailand, not personally so much, but I've lived with elder monks who have recently ordained, because it's a common thing in Thailand, and they can be really funny. They're kind of nice the first week or so, but after that, people start coming up to them and paying respect to them only because they think, oh, this is a senior monk. And so they start to get really unbearable after a while, and you know, putting themselves up and suddenly getting this ego. It's a common thing there's a lot of examples of this in the text. There's one of this man who was shipwrecked, and when he got back to shore, he had no clothes on. He had to swim for safety and discard all of his clothes. When he got to shore, he had nothing, and so he just put on a, he took a piece of wood or like a barrel or something, and sort of held that over him, so to hide his nudity, and he was sitting by the side of the road begging, and people looked at him and thought he maybe was a holy man, and so as a result of that, he became quite famous, and people would come and give him gifts and give him food and so on, and. As a result of that, he started to actually believe that he was an arahant. He started got this idea where he had just been going naked because he had no clothes out of necessity. He started doing it as a matter of practice, so when people brought him clothes, he wouldn't take them, and so on. Until finally someone woke him up to the fact that he was not enlightened, and this wasn't the practice of the enlightened beings. Because in that time, nudity was considered to be a valid religious practice. It was like giving up everything. And so this is what happened with this is what often happens with monks when they ordain old, and this is what happened with this monk, Tissa. Tissa was his name. And so he would sit in the middle of the monastery in the meeting hall or so, in this hall for rest hall. And when these senior monks came, or you know, monks who had been ordained for 10 years, 20 years or so on, they came in, he would just sit there in the sala and in the hall and you know, not offer to take their bowls, take their robes, not offer to massage their legs. It's all these duties that monks have to do to each other. When a monk comes walking from far away, because they would walk long distances, you had to offer water, you had to take their robe, they had to take their bowl, you had to show them where the kutis were and where the washrooms were and so on. You had to help them out if you were a junior monk. If you're senior, you still had to tell them where everything was, but you don't have to massage them or bring water for washing or so on. You just have to tell them where everything is and let them do them themselves. But this was a newly ordained monk, and so he's sitting there, and these monks look at him and they think, oh, he must be a senior monk. He's not getting up at all, so they talk to him and they slowly in a roundabout way ask him how long he's been ordained, and he said, oh, I've just recently ordained. I was ordained when I was old. And they said, what? Don't you understand? Don't you know how to do the duties to incoming monks? And he got really angry at them and called them all sorts of bad names. Because they started it. They said, oh, you haven't been trained in the proper etiquette and so on. And so he got all upset and went to the Buddha, and the Buddha confirmed that he should have done something for these monks. And Hissa said, well, the reason I didn't do it is because they were very mean to me. And so the Buddha then gave this verse. He said, if people are mean to you, you shouldn't ever hold on to it, and you shouldn't ever try to get back at them for it. You should never get upset at people. For one who gets upset, and this is where he said the verse, for one who gets upset at others and holds on to this, their enmity is never quenched. And then he told a story about the past, about these two ascetics who, something similar happened. These two ascetics were staying in this house together, and one of them, on his way out, he stepped on the other one's hair. What happened was one of them was going to lie down near the doorway, and he put his pillow at one side, but then when he went to sleep, after it got dark, he moved the pillow to the other side and slept with his head in the other direction. So the other guy thought the first guy's head was facing to one direction, and when he was on his way out, he stepped on the guy's hair, thinking he was going around to the end where his feet were. And the other ascetic got all angry and thought to himself that he would switch directions because this guy might step on his hair when he comes back in as well. And the guy goes out and thinks, okay, next time I'll go around the other side. And of course, the second ascetic turned around again, to try to get out of the first guy's way. And so this time he steps on the guy's neck. And the other guy gets all angry and says, first you stepped on my hair, then you stepped on my neck, and then he curses him. And this was a big thing in ancient India where they curse each other, and curses were thought to have great potency. But of course, this guy wasn't a very devoted ascetic, so it didn't have that much power. The other ascetic then got angry back and cursed the guy who he'd stepped on. And said, then I curse you, may your head split into seven pieces. And then it goes on, and there's the story of how he has to save the guy from his head is actually going to split. The guy who got stepped on and got all angry about it is going to have his head actually broken into seven pieces. And then the king comes, and the king is going to tries to get him to ask forgiveness. Look, ask forgiveness for getting so angry at him. He says, no, I won't ever ask forgiveness. And he says, then your head is going to split in seven pieces, and then they find some way around it. And then the Buddha tells this story. He says, you know, when people do things that we don't like, it's very easy to get angry. In fact, it's often something you can forgive in people when they get angry at you. Sometimes we do things and people get angry at us. Maybe we didn't even mean it, but they get angry, and we should always consider first that this is the way of the mind. When we get something that we don't like, it's very easy for us to get angry. So to the extent that someone gets angry at us for something we did, it's not really a problem, but the problem is when they hold on to it, when they keep it in their mind and they dwell on it. This is where evil really arises. Because anger is not something you can easily control or stop from arising. You have to be really clear and aware of reality as it is. You have to be able to see things, see the experience quite clearly before you can actually do away with anger. Otherwise, we all get angry. We get angry at the slightest pain, we get angry at the slightest noise, we get angry at the slightest comment. Very easy to become angry. But the bad the this is something that is normal. It's a part of being an ordinary human being. Where we really get cause problems is when we take it to heart, when we let it get to us. So this is why the Buddha said this is where real problem comes from. The second story is a bit different and much more famous. It's one of the most famous of the Buddhist stories of the Dhammapada. It's the story of this woman and an ogre. And how it started was this. There was a man whose mother wanted him to get a wife, and he didn't want to have a wife, and so he complained, she complained and complained and complained, until finally he gave in, and he went to a family and asked for their daughter in marriage. And it turns out she was barren. She couldn't give birth to children, so the mother got upset and didn't like this and said, "Look, we need to get you another wife." This is, you have to remember, this is based on ancient, this is in ancient India. And so the mother went, no, so the mother was going to get a wife, and the elder wife thought, "Uh-oh, if they go and get a wife, how will I get along with her?" And so she went out and found a wife for him herself. His first wife went out and found him a second wife and brought the second woman back. And the second woman did become pregnant, but the first wife was so scared that if this woman were to give birth, then she would be considered useless. She would be considered just to be a burden, and she would lose all of her status. So she mixed some drug up in the second woman's food and caused her to give an abortion, to have an abortion. What she did is she said, as soon as you become pregnant, let me know so I can help take care of you." And the second woman gullibly did so, and as soon as the first wife knew that she had become pregnant, she mixed this drug in and caused her to have an abortion. And she caused her to have an abortion twice in this way, until finally the second wife caught on. And so this time she didn't tell the first wife that she was pregnant. Until she was very close to giving birth, and then the first wife found out and found some way to sneak this drug into her food again. Only this time it was too late to have an abortion, and the child, it died, I guess, in her stomach, but it got stuck in the birth canal. And the woman realized that she was dying, the second wife. And as she was dying, she cursed the first woman and said, "You've caused me to lose three of my children, and now you've caused me to die." And she vowed that in her next life she would get even with the first wife. And then she died. And the first wife, the husband, because when he finds out that the first wife is the cause of the miscarriage, beats the first wife and makes her very ill, causes her to become quite injured to the point where she dies. She becomes sick and dies. The second wife becomes a cat in that same house, and the first wife becomes a chicken in the same house. And because of their karma, they enter into this circle of vengeance, which is so common in Buddhism. This is where we understand all of our enemies come from. People wonder why there are people who just seem out to get us. Why do we meet these people and they just don't like us? And no matter what we do, we can't do anything right. And they're always out to get us. In this case, this is because of these sort of things where we just can't let go of this cycle of vengeance. And so, the cat and the chicken, they knew each other right away. And the cat in that house, every time the chicken would give birth to chicks, the cat would come and eat the baby chicks. And this made the hen very angry. And in the next life, the cat became a deer, and the chicken became a panther or a tiger or something, a jungle cat. And the same thing happened. And they knew each other right away. They would be in the same forest, and as soon as they saw each other, it was like remembering an old friend, in this case, remembering an old enemy. And the jungle cat would eat the babies of the deer and ate the deer and so on. And in their next life, the final life, the deer was born as a ogre, and the panther was born as, or the jungle cat was born as a woman. Now, ogres in Buddhism, demon might be another word for it. It's like a spirit that eats children. It's like these goblins or evil spirits, evil ghosts. Demon, I guess, is the best word. And so this demon found ways to eat all of this woman's children again and again. First, pretending to be someone else, and so on, until finally the woman decided it was time to she got pregnant, and she gave birth to a child, and she knew she had to get out of town because this ogre was going to find some way to eat her. So they were walking along, leaving town, and then the ogre saw them on the road. And as soon as they saw each other, they knew right away who was who, and the woman ran. And she happened to be close to Jetavana, where the Buddha was staying in the Buddha's monastery. And so she ran into Jetavana, into the Buddhist monastery, thinking that, maybe there would be some help there. And the Buddha was in the middle of teaching in the midst of the assembly. And she ran right up to the Buddha and threw her baby over to the Buddha, I think. I can't remember exactly how it goes. It does seem a little bit strange. Okay, let me see what exactly happened. Laid her boy at the feet of the Buddha. She didn't place it on his lap. That would be way too much. And gave him over. She said, "I give you this child. Spare the life of my son." Now the demon wasn't able to enter into the monastery because of the angels that protect the place. But the teacher, the Buddha, had Ananda call the ogre in, call the demon in, allowing her to come in. And Ananda, the Buddha's attendant, brought her to stand before the Buddha. And the Buddha said, "Let her come. Don't anyone stop her." And then he said to her, he said, "Why have you done this? Had you not come face to face with a Buddha like me, you would have cherished hatred towards each other for an aeon, like the snake and the mongoose, who trembled and quaked with enmity, like the crows and the owls." These are references to ancient Indian fairy tales. Crows and owls are bitter enemies, and the snake and the mongoose are bitter enemies. "Why do you return hatred for hatred? Hatred is quenched by love, not by hatred." And when he had thus spoken, he pronounced the following stanza, and this is number 5. "For not by enmity is enmity quenched in this world, ever. By not keeping enmity, rather, is hatred quenched. This is an eternal law." And then he had them give up and have them understand the truth of the teaching that he was giving. So enmity is something that we very easily fall into in this world. When we're not meditating, we find that we're friends with other people. We can be friends easily with them for a while, but after some time, we'll always come to sort of a test of our relationship. We find this with husband and wife, that often it's so wonderful the first, I don't know how long before you're married, it's wonderful. Once you become married, it's wonderful for a short time, and then it starts to get back to the practicalities. And it's very easy for us to become annoyed and to hold on to this annoyance and to not be able to let go and to think that somehow everything should all be perfect and wonderful. And so we're not able to get along because of our need for our attachment to the way things used to be, or looking for something more exciting or so on. And so you see people divorcing and getting married again, and some people doing it 2 or 3 times, 4 or 5 times. Always thinking that it's going to be perfect this time, and not realizing that the nature of things is not always the way. It's not like that. That things cannot be perfect. So part of our Buddhist practice is this act of forgiveness, of letting go of our hatreds and being able to forgive each other. It's considered to be a gift that you give to someone when you forgive them. When you forgive someone, it's like giving them a gift. When we take the precepts, we always think of it as a gift, where we're never going to kill again, and this is our gift that we give to the whole universe, to all beings. We're never going to steal again. We make this resolve not to steal. This is a gift we give to all beings. We never cheat. We never lie. These are gifts that we give to all beings. This freedom from us, that no being need fear from us. And we make a resolve that when people do bad things to us, we take the Lord Buddha's words that even if bandits were to capture you and tie you down and proceed to saw off your arms and legs with a hacksaw while you're still alive, the Buddha said any person who for this reason cherished anger towards those bandits would not be a student of mine. And he said, remember this simile of this is the simile of the saw. This is the famous simile of the saw of the Buddha. He said, remember this simile of the saw, and there will be nothing which you cannot endure. So he said, to that extent, that anyone who is angry, even when people are sawing, hacking your arms and legs off, if you cherish anger towards them for that reason, you would not be a follower of the Buddha. But as I said before, it's not that we can't get angry at each other. We should always be willing to accept other people's anger at us. The Lord Buddha said, "Dasewa tena papiyo yokutang patikuchati," which means it's a worse evil to hold on to get angry back at someone who is angry at you. This is the worst evil of the two, because it is this taking things to heart, holding on to and keeping things in our mind, this idea of vengeance, that is the real evil. Anger is not something we should repress, and when it comes out, we should let it come up. Not let it come out by saying or doing things, but when it comes up, just look at it, come to understand where it came from and what it is, and learn and see that it's actually not a good thing. See clearly that it's not a good thing. We don't have to pretend that we know it's a bad thing and repress it. If we knew it was really a bad thing, we wouldn't give rise to it. When we practice meditation in this way, simply looking at the anger, looking at our disliking and our dissatisfaction, this is how we can really come to change our minds, change the way we look at things. When we just let the emotion be, it is an emotion, let it be as it is. Sometimes it's hatred towards others, sometimes it's hatred towards a situation, sometimes it's hatred towards oneself. And just look at these and learn about them. We don't have to reject them. This is why in meditation we always say to ourselves, angry, angry, and liking, wanting, so on, afraid, bored. We just remind ourselves this, it is what it is. Most of the time when one of these emotions comes up, we feel we have to do something about it. Instead of just reminding ourselves of what it, instead of just knowing it for what it is, we think, oh, now I have to, I'm angry, so now I have to say or do something, or that's bad and I have to repress it. We change that to say, this is anger, so it's anger. This is what we say to ourselves, angry, angry, and we simply know it for what it is. Nothing more, nothing less. So this is an important teaching of the Buddha, something we should always keep in mind, that we're never going to have an end. We'll be like this ogre and the woman who again and again were reborn in this cycle of vengeance until finally they met the Buddha and he explained to them that this isn't the way to become free from suffering. There's no end. You cannot beat someone to the point where you'll never have to fight again. And then we'll see later on in this book that about that, that when you win, there's always, when someone wins, there's always a loser, and the loser is always looking to win or looking to get even. So that's the Dhamma that I thought I would give today. This is from the Dhammapada. Thank you all for tuning in, and hope to see you again next time. If you have any questions, I'm happy to take them. But you'll have to either do it in world or on the website. You can text in on the website or in Buddhaverse. You can find the stories of the Dhammapada online, actually. You can find them in Google Books. If you go to Google Books and if you go to My Library, I don't know if there's, if you can find a link to Yutta Dhammo on Google Books. Probably search for My Library. I've got them all in my library. That's where I'm taking the English passage. passages from. The translations are not so good. For instance, the translation of the second story that I gave today has it wrong. Oh, sorry, the first story, where this ascetic is lying in the doorway, and the second ascetic steps on his hair. In the translation, it says, when the first ascetic goes out, the second ascetic's all angry and grumbling. It says, "Okay, now I'm going to turn around so that he can step on my hair again." Like as though he did it on purpose, turning around thinking, "Oh, good, now he'll step on my hair again." And that's not the truth. That's not what it means. And in Pali, it is ambiguous. It's using an optative case for the verb, which could mean that he will, or so he should, but it certainly doesn't mean that in this case. It means because he may. I'm going to turn around because he may. It doesn't mean that he may. It means he might. Right? It means he might, and this could be used in both senses, that I'm going to do it so that, because if I do that, then it might be a cause for him. But the meaning is not that. The meaning is, I'm going to turn around because he might do it again. And then he does do it again. He doesn't realize that by turning around, he's actually causing him to, because the other guy's smart and says, "Okay, I won't step on his hair again." And so they sort of, it's like those dancing routines where you're trying to go around someone, you go to the left, and they go to the left as well, and then you go to the right, and they go to the right. But you know, they're pretty good translations overall. You just have to read them with a grain of salt. Sometimes the wording is very Christian oriented, I suppose. Archaic, maybe, is the better word. But you find them on Google Books in Buddhist Legends. It's under the title of Buddhist Legends. There's three volumes. Yeah, the stories are really nice. The Jataka stories are probably nicer, but if you're a dedicated Buddhist, I think you won't mind the Dhammapada stories. I really enjoyed them, but I know a lot of people would read them and say, "Oh, that's rubbish," or "That's children's stories," or "It's fables," hence the name Buddhist Legends. But if you're a dedicated Buddhist in the traditional sense, I think you'd enjoy them. I mean, we're able to suspend our disbelief in a lot of these things and say, "Well, I don't know if that's true or not," and just take it at face value. And it's a really good read, actually. But comparing the two, I'd say the Jataka are better, actually. But the Dhammapada are nice. They're just maybe a little bit more sensational. Sensationalistic? How do you say? More exaggerated. So you'll have the same story in the Jataka as in the Dhammapada, but the Jataka version is much more toned down. But the Dhammapada, because of its sort of exciting nature, its sensational nature, it's used in traditional Buddhist countries, Thailand at any rate, Thailand especially, as basic a basic text for learning Pali. So novices learning Pali will study the Dhammapada. In fact, in Thailand, most of the Pali study is based on the Dhammapada commentaries and verses, commentaries and verses. But they don't even realize that the commentary is a commentary. It's considered to be the Dhammapada, is the stories and verses. So it's very, very popular in Thailand anyway.